Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Plenty of people's minds are on missiles these days. Our next guest spent more than 30 years working with U.S. Missile Defense. Chuck Ellington is a retired naval engineer. He managed the Navy's Ballistic Missile Defense Lethality Program. He's speaking at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum this Saturday at 9 a.m. in association with the South Dakota Veterans Forum. He joins us now from inside the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio at SDPB's Black Hills Bureau. Chuck Ellington, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
Let's lay a little groundwork first with what a ballistic missile is as compared to a cruise missile, for example.
Well, a ballistic missile is basically just thrusted with rocket motors and exits the atmosphere and then just comes back down. It's sort of like throwing a rock up into the air. The cruise missiles would be powered all the way until they reach their target. And so typically the Navy was concerned for years and years during the Cold War about anti-ship cruise missiles, which were fired from either aircraft or surface ships, and they were targeted against our aircraft carriers, part of their power projection, if you will.
So why is the ballistic missile so feared? What is it about that captures our attention so clearly now?
Well, during World War II, of course, we were separated by oceans from Japan and from the Germans in the European theater. But when the Germans started firing V-2 ballistic missiles against targets in England and the UK, we started to pay attention because we realized that if that technology was extended, it might be possible for enemies who are across oceans to reach our homeland, the North American continent, with actual ballistic missiles, attack us. And that's something that to which we had pretty much been invulnerable for so many years. Mm.
Did we have technology, comparable technology at the time?
No, the V-2s, of course, were the brainstorm of Wernher von Braun, who eventually came to this country, to Redstone Arsenal, to help us perfect ballistic missile technology. But at the time, no, the V-2 was more or less a surprise to all of our allies.
So what changes then in the 50s with the onset of the Cold War?
Well, as early as the Eisenhower administration, the defense experts really started looking seriously at ballistic missile defense. And those nascent efforts were carried over into the Kennedy and Johnson administrations. And they were more or less capped by implementation of a rather short-lived system called Safeguard. It was a national ballistic missile defense system that was fielded in 1975. And the idea was it was employed to protect our Minuteman missile fields so as to ensure a retaliatory capability in the event of a first ICBM strike by the enemy.
Interesting positioning, that would be the thing you would defend?
Yeah, exactly. There were previous efforts in national missile defense that also incorporated the idea that we would try to defend the major population centers.
Right.
And the earlier systems like Sentinel and Nike X actually had that as a part of the overall program. But it really became too expensive to try and endeavor to actually defend all of these areas like New York, L.A., Seattle, Dallas, New England. I mean, it just was too expensive.
So give me an idea when we're talking about the ballistic missiles of today. How long does it take? I mean, is the problem detection? What's the challenge that we need to overcome? And then we'll go back to the 90s a little bit. But just fast forward to today right now. What are the big challenges with defending against ballistic missiles?
The ballistic missile defense systems that we have in place today, first of all, you touched on detection, and we have extensive types of assets, satellites, that pick up on signatures from our just launched ballistic missiles. And then the idea, of course, is to have that information sent to the actual launchers, whether they're on ships or in theater or in Alaska as part of our national defense system. And we have to get these missiles, which are traveling at very high speeds, to impact the critical parts of the ballistic missile as it makes its way toward its target, either here in the homeland or in theater, maybe someplace like perhaps Anderson Air Force Base on Guam or other locations, Japan, South Korea, places like that.
So this is a physics problem.
Exactly.
it's a big old physics problem followed by a bunch of other stuff.
Well, the other idea behind this is that the concept today among our systems is something that the Army folks have labeled hit to kill. And the idea is that it's more or less like hitting a bullet with a bullet. So the actual kill vehicle, if you will, has to impact the reentry vehicle of the ballistic missile in order to bring about its defeat.
All right, so let's go back to your work with the U.S. Navy over the years, and you're in the 1990s, well, more than 30 years, 34 years. But take me to the 1990s, and what's changing as, you know, North Korea is threatening nuclear war with Kim Il-sung back then, and you've got what's happening with the Cold War and the fall of the Soviet Union, all kinds of exciting things.
Yes, well, turns out that NMD, or National Missile Defense, really kind of took a holiday after the end of the safeguard system until the early 80s, when, of course, President Reagan started the Strategic Defense Initiative. And then there were a number of efforts that were attempted there and all, but the early 1990s really saw a much increased interest in so-called theater missile defense. And that was during and after the Operation Desert Storm over in Southwest Asia. And that really served as a stepping stone for the Army's development of its PAC-3, Patriot Ballistic Missile Defense System, and the THAAD Ballistic Missile Defense System, THAAD standing for Theater High Altitude Air Defense. And you've probably heard about THAAD in the news. It's being fielded in Japan and I believe in South Korea, and as well as on Guam near Anderson Air Force Base. And at the same time, the Navy stepped up to the plate and they started a program called the Area Defense System and Theater-Wide Defense Systems. And that's where I came in. I was working to help define the so-called lethality of these two BMD systems against short and medium-range threats. And the idea behind that was we'd go through extensive ordnance testing and of course, was supported by computer-aided simulations as well.
All right. So this is the time that I was in the Marine Corps with Operation Desert Storm and SHIELD. I did not serve in the Gulf. But so when you say Patriot missiles and THAAD, that brings back a lot of memories that I didn't realize I had.
I can imagine.
Where are you starting from, and how are you doing this work? I know a lot of it you can't tell us, but what can you tell us about that time and sort of what the goals are and then what the process is?
Well, the first thing that these folks do when they're trying to establish a weapon system is set down some requirements. You know, the idea is what kind of damage do these missiles have to do to the incoming threats in order to destroy their mission? When it's an anti-ship cruise missile, it's fairly straightforward. You do enough damage to the cruise missile so that it essentially falls into the ocean, doesn't hit your ship, and that's what we call a mission kill. But when you start looking at ballistic missiles, it's a more complex type of definitive process, given that the ballistic missile can affect a large area. Certainly weapons that are RVs that are carrying nuclear weapons can affect a large area, but there may be other types of weapons of mass destruction, biological or chemical, for instance, and there we can't afford the so-called regrets of, say, defending Baltimore but having the effect of a ballistic missile land in Annapolis, if you will, that sort of a thing.
Sure.
So it's a lot tougher call when you define what has to be done. And then once these requirements are set down, then folks like us can analyze the threat and define what kinds of damage have to be done to these incoming reentry vehicles in order to accomplish our objectives as specified in requirements documents.
So is it going to be different depending on the payload every time, or are you looking at one system that can tackle whatever's coming at you?
Well, the idea is to have a universal system that can defeat any of these types of payloads. And it's difficult to achieve 100% lethality, but of course that's the objective, and I don't want to get into details of what right. what it might require, as you can well imagine.
Right, and if you're just tuning in, my guest, Chuck Ellington, he's a retired naval engineer. He's with us in the Black Hills Bureau right now, and what can you tell us about the success story of this time? Did things did systems come out of the early 90s, early to mid 90s, that are still in place today?
Well, obviously improvements have been made over the years, and I did not have any real involvement with the Army systems. Right. Of course, all of work that I did was with Navy systems, and you hear stories about the tests that have occurred, and whether or not they were successes or partial successes or failures and all. And frequently I think about the words of a late admiral in the U.S. Navy, Wayne Meyer, who said that you build a little, test a little, learn a lot. And so from each test, regardless of the outcome, we analyze what has occurred and we apply those lessons to future variants and future tests that we undertake, so as to build the most capable system and field it.
Was there a sense of urgency to your work, married to a sense of intense patience? How characterize that for me?
Well, the Navy was sort of late to the playing field when it came to ballistic missile defense in the early 1990s, and we actually had to fight. There was a lot of inter-service rivalries, you can well imagine, to get the funding to develop these two programs. But it's come a long way, and the system that is probably most capable today is called an SM-3, and there are proposed improvements to that system that supposedly will enable it to take on intermediate range ballistic missiles, whereas today they're more or less limited to medium range ballistic missiles or short range ballistic missiles. The other system that the Navy has in place today is a missile that is called the SM-6, which has capability not only against short-range ballistic missiles, but also against a lot of other types of conventional threats, if you will, aircraft, as well as anti-ship cruise missiles or land attack cruise missiles and other types of threats.
Where would the missile system be based? Is it shipboard? Is it sea-based? Where would you station this?
These missiles are all ammunition as part of the Aegis weapon system, okay, which is what you've probably heard about on our modern-day destroyers and cruisers. And the missiles are all stored in so-called vertical launch modules that are fired from magazines that are flush with the decks of these ships. And they have tremendous capabilities, especially the newer variants that incorporate a very capable solid propellant boost rocket motor called the Mark 72. That gives us a lot of reach so we can go out and do a lot more things.
I would never say that war or combat is cool, but that technology is pretty cool.
Yes, it's
there's
pretty interesting. Yes,
there's
it's
a
very
factor
interesting.
There that gets
oh, yes. No question about it, yes.
All right, so let's take it down to the level of, you know, a citizen in Los Angeles that's worried about, you know, North Korea launching an intercontinental ballistic missile, and they come to you and they say, do we have the technology to defend against that? And how do you explain that to someone?
Well, I tell folks that the system that's in place today that is in Alaska at Fort Greely and also at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California is called the Ground-Based Mid-Course Defense System. And I've had no involvement with that whatsoever, but its emplacement is specifically designed for defense against threats from potential adversary, specifically the North Koreans. And there's a positive attitude that one could take to the testing that's been done. I'm not convinced personally that North Korea has a valid capability to do anything to a continental United States right now.
Do you think we're moving forward fast enough in our technology to stay ahead of where they're moving forward? I know that's a big question that you can't answer.
That would just be guesswork on my part. Right. But I certainly respect what the Army is doing with its ground-based mid-course system, and I think that they're making great strides in fielding something that will be able to protect folks like us, as well as the folks in California.
Fascinating stuff. What do you miss about this kind of work?
Oh, it's always interesting to be on the inside. You know,
right?
I've been out of touch, of course, now for 9 years, and I haven't done anything with it and all. But it's a very, very, like you say, fascinating subject, and it was fun to work for many years. I guess there'll always be enemies, and we'll always have to have something to defend against. But ballistic missile defense is certainly cutting edge, no question about it.
What did the work do for you to change how you approach problems in life today?
That's a good question. I guess
right?
The idea would be to you're faced with a problem, you define it well, and then you work through to define the best means of addressing the types of difficulties associated with solving those problems. Sort of like writing requirements for a weapon system and then working to field prototypes and undertake tests along the lines, like I said earlier, of build a little, test a little, learn a lot, and then move on from there.
Chuck Ellington, he's a retired naval engineer. You can see him at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum this Saturday, 9 a.m. That's association with the South Dakota Veterans Forum. Chuck, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori.